Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, June 25th, 2024, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Anastasia. Well, in April of 2024, a group of starseeds who met at the Starseed Quests went to South France after Angela Franks, who is a seven-time Starseed Quest alumni, received divine guidance from Goddess to go. It was nearly a year after receiving the guidance to go that the trip came to fruition. Eight starseeds made the journey from Ireland, England, and the U.S., meeting in France to honor Mary Magdalene, Yeshua, the Essenes, and Cathars. Their journey spanned the Languedoc region, as well as Marseille and surrounding sites. Intense inner preparation happened for each person prior to the trip. The journey was clearly and divinely guided. Each starseed carried a unique power of presence, synergizing a group dynamic that catalyzed a magical and powerful journey. The experience married both challenge and magic, calling each member to step into their next level of personal evolution. They realized they were following the way to their inner self-love as well as unconditional love for each other, mirroring the way of the Essenes and Cathars set forth by Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. There was deep remembrance of the past, a releasing of that which no longer served, and blossoming of unconditional love within the group. They were present during the April 20th conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus in unplanned divine galactic timing. They were guided to use sound together throughout their whole journey, culminating in a mystical ocean cave that resembled a womb. Tonight, Angela will share their mystical journey that they experienced together. Angela is a vessel to channel the creation of powerful organite devices to assist with the ascension of humanity by bringing in the new earth frequencies, working with healing the land, and bringing in new light codes to expand and evolve human consciousness. Her work is guided and carries a deep connection to the power of crystals and sacred geometry symbols. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, bringing topics of interest and hope to starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. And we'd like to thank Kathy for hosting the switchboard tonight. And if you are an astrologer and are ready to learn the advanced galactic astrology, please email me, Arielle@starseedhotline.com. Lavendar and I are gathering a small group of qualified people to learn the starseed codes. Our main website, of course, is starseedhotline.com. The Stage 1 Starseed Confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one Zoom session. And we also have a daily transit service to help you navigate your life and mission with greater success, even if you know little or nothing about astrology. And remember, if you have a birthday coming up, you're going to get a window of 10 hours of great manifestation power. You can find out exactly when that happens by requesting your solar return timing. And if you order that a week or two before your birthday, you will get it in time. But if you want a reading of that chart, you'll need to order it about 2 months before your birthday. So first up tonight, I want to introduce Anastasia with her wonderful, fascinating Starseed News.
Well, good evening, everyone. Hello, Arielle.
Hello.
Great to be with you. Going to be a great show tonight. There was a wonderful story I wanted to share about the south of France, but I had so many stories I couldn't squeeze that one in. But it is about a city in the south of France that they decided is one of the best places in the world to live. Granada, I think it is. Oh, boy, now listen to me. I shouldn't have even brought it up if I didn't have my facts straight. If you're interested in it, go to – just Google it. City in the south of France voted the best place in the world to live. So you'll find it. It starts with a G. I'm sorry. I have so many stories on my mind. That one just slipped off. I heard you talking, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I should have put that story in. It would have fit right in with tonight's news. But anywho, I had to tell you that.
Well, the south of France will be well covered.
Yes, it will, in the best possible way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do have a story related, though, that's very, very rich. So we'll get to that in a minute. But last week, those of us in the Northern Hemisphere enjoyed the summer solstice. And this year, there was, they tell us, an extra reason to celebrate. According to analysis by a climate think tank, close to 20% of the world's electricity came from solar during the midday peak, an all-time record. That's up from 16% in 2023. In other words, global solar power generation has grown by approximately 25% in the last 12 months, as recorded on the annual summer solstice. That's a pretty remarkable growth rate. Yeah. In fact, solar capacity has grown faster than any other electricity source in history, with the expectation that solar will account for 8.2% of global electricity generation this month alone. And I bet you didn't know this. Almost 90% of the world's panels are installed north of the equator. That's interesting. Very interesting. Now, I was reading an article. I'm not going to cover this tonight, but I was reading an article. I think you've probably heard about it on mainstream news, that AI, the production of AI, is going to take probably more electricity than we have in the whole world to produce. They're so eager to produce AI and get that out and rolling. It takes so much data. It involves so much data. Massive amounts of electricity are going to be required. They say we don't even have the capacity to produce this. We can't. We don't have enough to make the AI happen as Microsoft wants it to. So they're busy trying to concoct a jillion different ways to come up with more power so that they can have their AI. We hear a lot about it, but nobody's really telling us about what an immense power shortage we'll have if we even implement part of it on a big scale. If you do a Google search, that's one thing. But if you use ChatGPT to do that search, you'll be using 10 times the electricity. If you use any AI on the computer, you're using 10 times the electricity you would for just a normal search. That's something to keep in mind. It's not really a green solution, as they say. Well, let's go to the jungles. Let's talk about koala bears, or koalas, I guess I should say. For the first time, free-ranging wild koalas have been observed regulating their body temperatures ahead of the hottest days of summer. They have somehow mysteriously been able to lower their body temperatures well below average during the cooler mornings. Now, that's astonishing. The research was published in a magazine called Conservation Physiology. And the research lead said, this strongly suggests koalas predict the hottest days for morning conditions and adjust their core temperatures accordingly. We have never seen this type of behavior before in koalas. That's just remarkable. They can sense and they can turn it down so that they are cooler during the day. It's like turning your air conditioner down, knowing that you're going to anticipate a very hot day. And if you don't get it cooler in the morning, it's going to heat up in the afternoon in your house. And these animals do this within their own bodies. That's just amazing.
I'd love to be able to do that.
isn't that something? No, I think if they can do it, why can't we? You know,
the more
we find out about the world, the more opportunities there are to say, why not us? Why not? Why
That's
can't
right.
we do that?
That's exactly. right.
Knowing you, Ariel, I think you could. All you have to do is put some focus on it. I dare say I think you can do it. Well, a massive study of 2.3 million people has found that, independent of socioeconomic factors, mental well-being may be the most important single aspect to healthy aging and living longer lives. Got to be great in the head. However, a surprise finding, which was published in the journal Human Nature Behavior, was that those who reported the best mental health and stress resilience, which, by the way, boosts our well-being, happen to eat more cheese. I love cheese. That's a good sign. Eating more cheese apparently helps you to age better. So bring out the cheese. I'm all for that. Well, in the beginning of 2023, Colorado began enforcing a 10-cent charge on all single-use plastic and paper bags at stores in the hope that it would encourage the use of reusable bags. I'll bet people in Colorado were ticked off about that. 10 cents on every single-use plastic and paper bag. Well, they were hopeful that it would discourage plastic and waste. But this turned into a massive success. A report is now claiming that Colorado used 1.5 billion fewer plastic or paper shopping bags since they implemented that program. That's been a year and a half. 1.5 billion fewer bags wasted. That's huge.
That's wonderful.
Oh, yes. Here is a story that's really surprised me. I had no idea. I love doing Starseed News. It educates me. Ethiopia. It's the country, the nation, that is still living in 2016. Now, that's not figurative. It's a fact. Travelers that visit Ethiopia are often stunned to learn that they've gone back in time. But the country's calendar is intentionally behind the rest of the world. It really is. On the 11th of September, Ethiopians will celebrate the end of one year and the beginning of another. However, when the East African country rings in the new year in a few months' time, it will technically be their 2017, which is according to the Ethiopian calendar. So why is Ethiopia, Africa's second most populous country, 7 years and 8 months behind the rest of the world? Well, the answer lies in traditions that dates back centuries and a very solid sense of their national identity. In Ethiopia, the birth year of Jesus Christ is recognized as 7 or 8 years later than the Gregorian or Western calendar, which was incidentally introduced by Pope Gregory VIII in 1582. And although much of the rest of the world went on to adopt the Gregorian calendar, Ethiopia decided to keep its own. So Ethiopia's year follows a solar lunar system. It's 13 months long, with 12 of those months lasting for 30 days. The final month consists of just 5 days, or 6 days during a leap year. That, of course, is all very well if you don't need to communicate with the outside world. However, lots of people and businesses need to do just that. So international businesses and schools based in Ethiopia tend to follow the Gregorian calendar, meaning that many Ethiopians have little choice but to use both calendars simultaneously. And this is kind of cool. By the way, New Year in Ethiopia, their word for that is Enkutashtash, which translates to the gift of jewels. And I think that's a lovely word for a new year, the gift of jewels. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, people that watch Star Trek, you might have heard of a Dyson sphere. It's been on the mainstream news about Dyson spheres. And do you know what a Dyson sphere is? Well, for one thing, it is a science fiction artifact that was featured in a prominent Star Trek episode. But be that as it may, the best science fiction is rooted in some pretty yummy theoretical physics. Thus, it just so happens that a theoretical physicist by the name of, what else, Freeman Dyson, was the first to propose the concept of Dyson spheres way back in 1960. That was 65 years ago. Well, this is pretty complicated stuff, but the general idea is that technologically superior alien civilizations might build gigantic structures surrounding their home stars, or maybe they might build them around black holes, in order to harness this gargantuan galactic energy to further advance their civilizations. The most extreme version of these megastructures would be an enormous sphere that encapsulates an entire star, and lesser versions could include ring stations and swarms of giant mirrors. Well, now, at least 7 stars in the Milky Way show signs of potentially harboring a hypothetical super advanced form of alien technology known as the Dyson Sphere. Scientists tell us this. And while the researchers cannot be sure that these stars host intelligent civilizations, they are exciting about the search for intelligent extraterrestrial life in the cosmos and this discovery that they've just made. Now, there's a lot of debate going on between scientists, and the naysayers are saying that very unlikely that a civilization could ever become advanced enough, because usually we end up killing each other off and killing ourselves off before we get that far. But, you know, that's sort of bringing everybody else in the universe down to our level, don't you think?
Yeah.
Anyway, those who argue that, of course, there could be civilizations that advance beyond us, advanced enough to construct these behemoth structures, and if these Dyson spheres do exist, we should be able to find them. Now, that's because if a Dyson sphere did surround an alien star, the heat from that star would cause the Dyson sphere to heat up and emit large amounts of infrared radiation, which our telescopes spot easily. And as a result, the Dyson sphere hunters, and there really are those, astronomers look for those, they're looking also for spikes in the wavelengths known as infrared excess emissions among the spectra of distant stars. They're looking for this stuff. They are one of the key technosignatures that alien-hunting astronomers want to find, along with weird radio signals, atmospheric greenhouse gases, and artificial light. Well, in this new study, which has been in the mainstream news, that was published on May 6th in the journal Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, researchers used a computer program to look for these infrared excess emissions among more than 5 million stars in our galaxy, and they did this by surveying with a wide range of different observatories, sky telescopes, in which they discovered these 7 stars that I just mentioned. Now, these are M-dwarf stars, a class of main stars that are smaller and dimmer than our sun, but they are all located within 1,000 light years of Earth. That is very close.
Yeah.
Now, researchers are going to carry out follow-up observations on these newly identified stars. They say they're going to use more powerful instruments, such as the James Webb Space Telescope, hopefully to attain greater accuracy as they continue to search for other signs of intelligent extraterrestrial life in our systems. Well, that's all pretty overwhelmingly complicated, isn't it? It's a lot. And I had to read that about 10 times before I could condense that article into something that I could explain it to you. But as for me and inventions I'd like to see for a more advanced civilization here, how about this? I wish we could just record silence and then play it back full blast on loudspeakers as big as Dyson spheres to make our noisy neighborhoods more quiet. In fact, totally, totally quiet. There, I've just invented a silence sphere that will fix at least half the world's populations. Don't you think? I live in such a noisy neighborhood. I long for silence. So I think that's what we ought to invent. Well, this has also been on the mainstream news, which I think leaves a lot to be answered. It's now they're giving us stories. They just give tidbits, little bits and pieces. 1,000 questions remain, you know, unanswered on just about everything you hear. And I'm sorry I can't add any more than what I've got here because I can't find anything. It's not only a mystery monolith, it's a mystery story. But indeed, we're going to talk about the mystery monolith that was just spotted in the desert. And Las Vegas police have no idea how it got there. It's made of mirrors. In a post on Facebook this week, the police confirmed that a monolith had been found along a popular hiking trail. The police said, we see a lot of weird things when people go hiking, like not being prepared for the weather, not bringing enough water, but check this out. And then they posted this photograph. Over the weekend, Las Vegas Metro Search and Rescue spotted this mysterious monolith near Gas Peak, north of the valley. How did it get up there? Now, they didn't post a photo of anyone standing near it, and nor did they tell us how big it was. I have no idea. I wish I could tell you because I would like to know. I couldn't find any information. But you've heard about that probably if you tune in at all to the news. They've been talking about it. Not very clearly, but they've been talking about it. And did you know that Titan, Saturn's largest moon, is the only planetary body in the solar system besides our own that currently has active rivers, lakes, and seas? But we wouldn't want to swim in them because Titan's river systems are thought to be filled with liquid methane and ethane that flows into the wide lakes and seas, some as large as the Great Lakes on Earth. And this is a really special story. 1,600-year-old papyrus fragment contains earliest account of Jesus' childhood. What? Indeed, a scrap from extra-biblical infancy Gospel of Thomas was discovered in a German archive, and it contains the story of young Jesus. It's a very small fragment of papyrus. They say it's the earliest known copy of the infancy Gospel of Thomas, which is an early Christian text describing the childhood of Jesus that once enjoyed enormous popularity, but was not canonized into the New Testament. And when I tell you what's in it, you won't wonder why it wasn't canonized into the New Testament. Well, the fragment measures about a little over 4 by 2 inches. That's tiny. But it does contain a total of 13 lines in Greek letters, around 10 letters per line, and originates from late antique Egypt. This is, according to a press release, from the Humboldt University in Berlin. Now, the papyrus fragment, which is part of the Hamburg State and University Library Archive, was discovered after it was scanned and put online as part of an ongoing digitization project. What makes it so interesting is it contains part of a story from the beginning section of the Infancy Gospel of Thomas, in which young Jesus fashions birds made of clay, and then he blows into them the breath of life, and they come to life. It also contains stories about Jesus striking a couple of his companions dead that he didn't like and blinding others, along with many other assorted miracles that he performed as a young boy. Isn't that something? Very interesting stuff. And it's a very extensive story about these documents and how they've been stored, and now that today's technology has enabled people to read them, interpret them, we have so much more that we can use to discover what they say and to sort of put these puzzle pieces together with the technology that we have now, which we didn't have when these were acquired originally. So they're constantly finding out new things. Oh, here's a wonderful story. Diesel the donkey decided he was born for adventure. Now, he was living a nice life on a ranch in Sacramento with a couple named Terry and Dave and their other animals. Well, one day in 2019, the donkey bolted during a hike, and he was never seen by the family again. They took him on a hike without having a rope around his neck. I don't know, but he got away. And after months and months of looking for him, they assumed the worst. But they tell us that Diesel the donkey is obviously a survivor, because earlier this year, a bow hunter caught sight of a herd of wild elk there in California and was shocked, utterly shocked, to see a donkey in their midst. There's a photo of it on the net. Not only did the donkey look perfectly at home, he seemed to hold some respect among the herd, because donkeys are natural protectors. After seeing the video in the hunter book, the woman said she's certain that Diesel is living his best life. Though the family miss him, they're not going to disrupt the donkey and his new family. As they say, if you love something, let it go and let it live with a herd of wild elk. And the photograph indeed showed the donkey looking so perfectly happy, well-fed. There was probably 8 or 10 elk in this herd. He's right in there with them. That's a wonderful story. And finally, we live in anxious times. And I think most of the people in this, of our group anyway, managed to find many beautiful ways to calm themselves. But life is a challenge. So I thought I'd share with you something called the 333 rule. Because anxiety happens, particularly with work, traffic, you know, lots of different things, relationships, politics, you name it. Things can get under our skin. And so there are strategies that we can use to cope with our anxiety and keep it from overwhelming us. It's a super simple technique that helps you regain control to calm your mind, get you centered. It essentially requires you identify three things that you can see, three things that you can hear, and three ways that you can move your body. Basically, it's a way of distracting yourself from your anxiety by shifting your attention to your senses. By redirecting your focus away from anxious thoughts, it grounds you in the present moment, and that's a very good place to be. So when you find yourself experiencing any anxiety, why not give this 333 a try? So here's how. Look around. Identify three things that you can see. Take a moment to really observe these objects, noting their details, colors, their shapes. This process helps you to shift your focus from internal anxiety to your external environment. Next, listen closely. Find three sounds that you can hear. These could be as loud as a blaring siren, or subtle as birdsong, or maybe the hum of a fan. There's going to be some sounds around you. Find three sounds and listen. Listen closely. And lastly, move your body. Move three parts of your body. It could be as simple as rolling your shoulders, wiggling your toes, or turning your head. And pay attention to the sensations that are caused by each of your movements. This is a technique you can use anywhere, anytime. And what's more, you can repeat it as many times as needed until you feel calm and collected. You may have to keep after it, but the anxiety will dissipate, and you'll be made new again. So I have a quote to share with you tonight. Rest is not idleness, and to lie sometimes on the grass under trees on a summer's day, listening to the murmur of the water or watching the clouds float across the sky, none of this is by no means a waste of time. That's for sure. Let us slow down. Let us do our best to absorb silence, be with the grass and the trees and the sky, the dandelions and the bees, all of that. We will be made new through that as well. From my heart to each one of you, have a beautiful couple of weeks, and I really am looking forward to tonight's show. I'm going to catch it. It's going to be great.
Oh, cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well,
so
thanks,
we'll see
Anastasia.
You later.
Okay,
you
great job. And we'll talk to you in a couple
good
of
night.
Weeks. Good night.
Yep, good night.
Okay, let's see. Switch over, and Angela, I'm coming to open up your mic.
Can you
hear
me?
Yeah, there we are. Yeah, hello.
Oh, good, good. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to hear about your adventure.
Oh, my, yeah, it was quite a lot. Yeah, we were there for about 10 days, just under 2 weeks, so it was quite a journey. So,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
And how did that come about?
So, you know, it's interesting that when I really think about it, to be very, very honest, I'm going to say that it started with my very first Starseed quest, believe it or not. And because that very first quest, I had an experience with Jesus. The second quest, I had an experience with Mary Magdalene. And, you know, that just set me down this path of seeking the truth, you know, and looking for the hidden information. And I just wanted to know more, and that connection was just, like, fired up. And I, it became all of me. You know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
and then I'm going to say that every quest that I went to since then, which I've been to about seven of them, there was somebody I had to meet. And at each quest, like the circle of friends that I have now, like all of my closest friends that that mean so much to me in my life, I met at the quest. And,
wow.
I know, and it's quite a circle now, and I just want to take a second, Ariel, just to express my heartfelt gratitude for everything that you guys do, because I just can't imagine what my life would be now without you guys, without the quest, without all these people that are in my life now. And so I just want to take a moment just to love on you guys and just recognize the difference that you guys make in people's lives. So I just want to say that.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, it has the same effect on us. We have met so many outstanding starseeds from across the world,
mm-hmm.
who heard that call, and they too have made connections.
Yeah.
Aaron.
Yeah. So
from England was there.
Mm-hmm. Aaron
and
Lauren.
And Lauren.
Anya. Mm-hmm.
Anya.
Of course, Anya.
Uh-huh.
She's never gonna not be on an international trip.
Right.
And myself, my mother, and then Tom from Ireland, and then there were two others from Ireland, and you know they kind of come into the story that I'll be sharing. So three from Ireland, one from England, and the rest from the U.S. And so, it kind of started in 2023, where I had this experience where I was in between sleeping and waking states. You know what I'm talking about, where you can have vision.
Yeah.
And I found myself, this was an experience I was having with Goddess, what I want to call the energy of Goddess. And I had pulled out a stack of brochures from my purse, and each of these brochures represented a different country that I would need to visit. And on the top of this stack of brochures was just a big letters spelling out France. And it was just a very clear message, go to France. Like there was no question. It was super clear. And after that experience, like I told my mother about it, and she said, well, you know what? I was awake and sitting on the couch, and I saw a goddess standing at your door, and I knew you were getting a message. And that's how I know this message came from Goddess. And it kind of freaked her out because she could see so clearly this being standing at my door. So she knew it was important. And after she told me that, I knew it was super important. So in 2023, that same year, I ended up going to Ireland three times, which is just kind of crazy.
Wow.
I know. So my second trip, I met a woman named Helen. And you know what it's like when you meet somebody who's soul family. It's like this instant knowing. And
uh-huh.
It's like you know you don't even need a filter with this person. So I met Helen. It was an instant connection. And then on my third trip in August, I went with Aaron. And on one of our days, so Helen does tours on the Hill of Uisnech, and the Hill of Uisnech is like a sacred site in the middle of Ireland, like directly in the middle. And anyway, so we went to go do one of her tours so that we could meet up with her and talk with her afterwards. Well, during the tour, we're at this sacred place called what they call the Catstone, and she was telling a story. And in the middle of telling this story, she was to say the name of a particular person. But this was one of these moments where it's something, we don't know how it happened, but she looked at me as she's, you know, telling this story, and she says the words, Mary Mag, as if she's going to say Mary Magdalene, and she caught herself, and then she was like, what? And then she continued on, you know, telling her story for the tour. And so after that, Aaron and I met up with her, and I said, do you remember, you know, when you were talking, you know, in your tour, and you looked at me, and you were saying Mary Mag, and you were going to say Mary Magdalene, and she's like, what? She didn't even remember it. And so that got us talking about Mary Magdalene, and then I told her how we were planning on going to France, and she was like, well, I was going to go to France, and then it was like we knew we needed to go together. So we knew that she was going to be part of this. And I'm telling that story just because to illustrate how important it was for each person who went to be there. You know what I mean?
Right.
All together. So, and then Anya knew when we needed to go. She just always seems to know. And we did not plan that it would be during the Jupiter and Uranus conjunction, but it just happened to be that way. And then during the planning process, one day I was on the phone with Aaron, and suddenly, I mean, we're just, you know, randomly talking, and suddenly he was like, you know what, I need to find a place to stay. He needs to find an Airbnb for the first part of the trip. So it was really sudden, and he just Googled it, and the first thing that came up was this place called Chateau de Aragon. And he sent it to me, and it was like this amazing place, and there was no doubt this feeling that we needed to stay there. But the problem was is that it was a 7-night minimum, and we needed it for only 3 nights. And so I had to message the owner back and forth several times, and several times I almost gave up for several reasons, long amounts of time and not hearing back, or, you know, just one thing after another. And I almost gave up, but my guidance kept telling me, keep on it, keep on it. And so we managed to secure it, and then we found out that this place was a Cathar safe house. And that was one reason why it was so important for us to stay there.
Oh, wow.
The history of it. I know. It just really blew our minds, like how organized, like divinely orchestrated this was. And Aaron later said, you know, he felt like it was like a walk-in coming in to secure that place. It didn't feel like him. You know, it was just sort of like channeling it through or something. So anyways, and then the second part of the trip, you know, we secured that Airbnb, and Aaron was looking around the area, and then he found on Google Maps this cave that looked really like mystical, like it just resembled like a womb. And what, if you're looking at the slideshow, I did include a picture of what the cave looks like. But like the bottom of the cave is the ocean, and you can sit in the cave and like put your feet in the water. It's just beautiful. It's a powerful cave. But we found out that where we were staying was on the Amethyst coastline on the Gulf of Lion, and we were getting there just in time for the conjunction. And I was just, my mind was just blown with how all of this was being put together, like beyond our understanding, and all we had to do was just go with it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so one thing we knew is that we were going to be using sound together in that cave. And then, so, you know, leading up to the trip, and, you know, there was quite a bit leading up to the trip, a lot of preparation. A lot of us were actually going through a lot of preparation in our personal lives leading up to it. We could feel it. But anyway, so really close to the trip, like a couple weeks out, we were 7, and there was a question of if we were going to be 8 or not. And so I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm sending somebody a text, and you know how your phone auto-corrects. So my phone kept auto-correcting this word that I was trying to type to the word 8 with a question mark twice in a row. 8? And so it was like my guidance telling me, okay, you need to move on this. Are we going to have the 8th person, you know, reach out and find out? So I did. I reached out, and tickets were secured that day, and we were going to be 8 people. So that happened, which I thought was really interesting. I know.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it was important that each one of us who went be there. And then something else that happened, and this is something that's going to weave throughout the story, but a couple of months before the trip, I ended up injuring my knees, both of them, and to the point where it was difficult to walk. And I was doing like every healing modality I could think of to heal them before we went so that I could do all the things we needed to do, and that would include a lot of hiking. But closer to the trip, my knees were still not where they needed to be. And so I put my ego aside and I made wheelchair arrangements for all of the airports. And I'm sitting here thinking, how am I going to do all these things? You know, how am I going to do all this hiking? And, anyways, I was just going to go with it. And, okay, so that story is going to continue as I move on. But some messages that came through prior to the trip of things or energetics that were going to be important. And one of them was the very most important thing was the interconnection within the group. Like that was the most important thing, energetic of the trip. And the second part was that we would be using our voices together in different places throughout the trip, and that was going to be important. And I was also let known that there were going to be some challenges, but that, you know, we would all have each other. And so those were the messages that were coming through before the trip. So so now the trip is, you know, beginning, and we are on our way to the airport, and I'm driving, and I get this text from Anya, and Anya is like, she's upset because she has just finished her first leg of the flight, and she gets this notice that the rest of her trip is canceled. Like, her flight and everything to France is canceled. And I was just like, there is no way this can be true. This cannot happen. I mean, this has been a year in planning. We're all supposed to go, and I know it. So something told me, send her a little snapshot of my flight itinerary and see if she can get on the same flight. So I did that. I sent it to her. And 10 minutes later, I get this call back from her, and she's like, guess what? I'm on your flight all the way to France. And I was just like, oh, my God, you are kidding me. Like, this whole time that, you know, I don't know if you guys were aware, but Air France was going through a lot of changes. And when we booked our tickets, like, they had been canceled. I can't tell you how many times our flights were canceled. It was almost getting funny. Because, like, we make another flight and we just know it's going to get canceled again. So we had originally arranged for our flights to be all at the same time. We wanted to fly together, and it just wasn't happening, so we gave up on it. So at the last minute, it's like the source, God, is like, okay, here you go. I'll let you guys be together. It's just, you know, don't freak out that your flight's going to get canceled.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so that happened, and she met up with us, which was amazing. So yeah, that was the preparation for the trip, which was quite a lot. So,
I think it's important that you kept your focus on the objective and didn't get bogged down in the 3D.
Exactly.
You know, way things are
exactly.
done.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could have gotten worried and, you know, all of that. So, anyways. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, how many people would have said, oh, this is a sign we shouldn't go?
Right? Yeah.
You know, and that's like the opposite of the, mm-hmm. what the message is like, you know, as
yeah.
you were told ahead of time that there will be challenges.
Exactly.
They didn't say what it was going to look like.
Mm-mm.
So cool. So you arrived in France?
Yeah. We arrived in France, and, you know, we got there, and there was a rainbow greeting us, which was just beautiful and amazing.
Oh.
I know. It was like a welcome. It was just this welcome, and we just love that. And so, you know, continuing a little bit on the knee story, so we arrive at Chateau de Aragon, and I get out of the car, and I find that I'm keeping up with everybody. Like, I'm walking with everybody, and it was blowing my mind, and I was just exclaiming, I'm walking with you guys. Like, I'm not going really slow in pain. I'm walking, and that itself felt amazing. I didn't understand it, but I'll take it. I was grateful. As we have to say, the energies of Chateau de Aragon, they were really powerful. You could feel the history of the place. And some of us began to sort of receive some memories, you know, like being there. And the first day there, well, let me just tell you about the first night, because this is still a little bit down on like on the knee story. I'm waking up from the first night, and it's morning, and I'm feeling this buzzing happening on my knees at the site of the injuries on both knees, and it's like a bzz, 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 and it's like this pattern, like a Morse code pattern of buzzing on my knees, and I didn't know what it was, but it felt like some kind of, I don't know, assistance with healing for what I needed so that I could do what I needed to do on the trip. And so our first day was to go to Montsegur, which is quite a hike up the hill.
Yeah.
And so I have to say, you know, our first day there and then going up to Montsegur, I hiked all the way up with zero problem. So I went from being in a wheelchair through the airports one day to the next day hiking up Montsegur. I mean,
oh, man.
To me, it was a miracle. I felt it was such a miracle, and I was so grateful. Just one of those amazing things. But, yeah, anyway, yeah, Chateau d'Aragon, it was powerful, and several of us that first day or the first 2 days while we were there had some pretty big breakdowns of receiving memories of, you know, losing people, losing our friends, being killed, and having to move through that. But yet here they are with us in this life, with us, looking at each other and living with each other and loving each other. It was just, it was quite the experience. But there were several of us that went through that. Let's see. The Montsegur was actually, I know a lot of people, when they have been there, have felt a lot of the heavy energies. But I'm going to say that when we went there, we felt pretty peaceful, all of us. And it could be because we were all together, you know. We weren't, like, alone or just with two people. It was a whole group. And it just felt peaceful. It felt really good to be there together. It was just a beautiful experience. And after Montsegur,
that's great.
Huh?
Let me interrupt. When Tom had been there before, did he leave Giza crystals?
Yeah, he did. And I know there's that. I don't know if you know any people on the call have heard his story, but he left the Giza crystal the last time he was there and had quite a scary experience of, you know, the energies there. If I remember correctly, he said he was being like choked. Literally, like physically felt like there was something pressing on him and choking him that was a negative energy. And this time around, he didn't, you know, I asked him how he felt and everybody, and he said, no, we're good. We're good.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. And so after Montsegur, we went to this place called, and I'm not sure that I'm saying this right, but Chateau de Puivert. It's spelled P-U-I-V-E-R-T, but I'm imagining it might be pronounced Puivert. I'm not sure. But this was a really amazing place. But I have a little story about getting there that kind of parallels something that happened while we were there. Part of this trip for myself was about breaking through with my voice. Throughout my life, have had this block with my voice, and especially with my singing voice. And I was trying to prepare myself before this trip with singing, and so I had this experience where I had this breakthrough, and this chant came out really powerfully to, like, break through these walls or these blocks. And I posted that chant on social media, and that plays into the story, so I just wanted to share that. So we're on our way to Chateau de Puivert. And the GPS has taken us in circles because, you know, the Wi-Fi or the GPS that doesn't have a very good signal way out there. And we finally go up this road that wasn't a road. And it was like, you know, rocks and grass, and it's really steep. And we're taking the car up the road. And then there's this point where these rocks start, like, scraping underneath the car. And I'm like, oh, my God, what do I do? Do I continue driving forward, or do I back up and try to go around these things, or what do I do? And so I decide to back up. So I back up, and the back tires come to a point where, because this road is, like, right on a cliff, so the back tires get to, like, the edge of this cliff. And so I try to move forward, and the car's not moving. So the car is, like, stuck in this place where the back tires are on the edge of a cliff, and I can't move forward, and there's these rocks. Like, how am I going to get out of this situation?
Oh, no.
I know. And then so Tom gets out of the car behind us, and he helps and just, like, pushes the car as I'm trying to gun it, and we get it out of this position, and we're able to park. And so he, you know, guns the next vehicle up that steep hill. And anyway, so we get there. And we walk into this place, and it's just, again, you can feel the history, and there's this beautiful round table. And we all decide to surround this round table and join our voices together in harmonizing. And it was just the most beautiful, beautiful experience. And my mother had this experience where Jesus came to her. And, you know, I won't share all of her experiences. My mother had quite a few experiences with Jesus, you know, while we were there. And continuing on with the voice story, I'm headed up a spiral staircase, and I was sharing that chant that I told you about with Tom, playing it on my phone. And Helen is just within earshot in the room that you call it the music room. And she says, Angela, you're going to sing that song in this room. And I was like, what? It's like, this is one of the scariest things you could ask me to do, is to sing in front of other people by myself. I've never done it, and I never wanted to do it. And but as I told you, I've had this block. And so the universe is like, no, this is divine appointment. You are going to break through this. And so I was put in the middle of this music room and surrounded by three people, Tom and Helen and Lauren, and they made a triangle around me, put me in the middle of the room, and they were like, sing. I was just like, I was so full of fear. Like, my whole body was shaking. But I knew I couldn't back down. I couldn't say no. I had to do it. And so I did. I let that chant out, and I sang. And it was just, it had to happen, and I'm so glad I did not know about it ahead of time. But this was the first of several stories that happened in regard to that. So anyways, okay, so that was our first day. And then the next day.
Just the first day.
That was the first day. It was a lot going on energetically the whole time. So the next day we wanted to, if you've heard of the book, I'm sure you have, Anna, the Grandmother of Jesus. And then they talk about Mount Bugarash and how they had their first Essene outpost there. And I knew I wanted to go. And a close place that I found to it was called the Pont Roman or Romaine Hike. And it has this beautiful arched bridge over Rennes l'Abbaye, the river, the waters. And so we went there, and it was just absolutely amazing. And it just felt like we were returning there. You know, it felt like all of us had been there together before, and we were returning. And the waters just felt so sacred. And it was just beautiful. And it was really close to Mount Bugarash. And that mountain, just being near it, feels so powerful. That whole area was just powerful. So anyway, we spent quite a bit of time there. And after that, we went to Rennes-la-Château. And this place, I mean, I just love it when unexpected things happen. But the group of us, all eight of us, were walking up the road to Rennes-la-Château, and there before me on the ground is this Vesica Pisces in light. And, you know, if you're looking at the slideshow, you'll see I included a picture. There I am standing with a Vesica Pisces right there at my feet in light. And I can't tell you how that made me feel, because for me, the Vesica Pisces is so sacred, and it's so sacred that it's in my business logo, and it's part of the Mary Magdalene pendant that I make. It's a very sacred symbol. And there it was, right there at my feet, and I was just in disbelief. I was like, look, everybody, look at this. Where's it coming from? You know, it was just something I'll never forget. And,
wow.
I know. So anyway, we go in, and everybody, throughout the trip, you know, there was eight of us. So it was like we were like being moved around, changing around from groups, like being moved around like pieces on a chessboard. Okay, now you're going to be with these people. Now you're going to be with these people. And it was just all divinely orchestrated. So there's a point where Aaron, Anya, my mother, and I are in a chapel in Rennes-la-Château. And we hold hands, and Aaron says, okay, I feel like I need to sing. So he lets his voice out, and he sings, and then he's done, and we're all still standing there, and there's silence. And I feel his higher self saying, come on, Angela, join in with your voice. Come on. And I'm like, no. But okay, finally I agree and I do it. And then we start harmonizing together. And it was the first time I was able to let my singing voice out without complete fear. So it was like the next step. And And then my mother had a beautiful rose offering, and she had just the most beautiful experience with Jesus that I can't really, talk about. It's a very sacred experience to her, but she just had the most amazing experiences, and she was like holding space for a lot of us who were going through a lot of transmutative work and breaking through kind of work,
Mm-hmm.
So by the third day, it was time to drive to the other side of France. So it was our travel day, all the way to the Marseille side. So we decided to stop at St. Marie de la Mer. And this is quite a little story, kind of really unexpected. But Anya had gifted me a rose quartz heart, and I had placed it over my womb that day. And I've never done that before with a crystal. I just felt guided to do it that day. So we get to St. Marie de la Mer, and we're loving the beach, after the really cold weather and sleet and wind and, the Languedoc region. And we're enjoying the beach, and, Lauren is, like, just running through the water, and I'm taking a video of her, and it's this joyous moment. And in that joy, she felt like she wanted to say, "Look, Mom," like she wanted to call me Mom. And that was playing into a future story, but she didn't know why she wanted to call me that. And so as we're touring around, walking around, I begin to feel this pressure building in my heart, just like this emotional pressure, and it began to get really intense, and I didn't understand it, but it was connected with Lauren. And I didn't have any story with it. It just kept getting heavier and heavier and, like, more pressure. And so by the time I walked into the chapel in there, I just completely lost it. I broke down and cried from the deepest parts of my being. And she sat right next to me, and she didn't understand why, but she put her hand over my womb. And I just cried it out and released it. And then as time is passing, we're beginning to understand that there was a circumstance where I was a mother figure to her, and I had lost her in that region. And there was a lot of grief still that needed to be processed. And so we've, figured all of that out. And then as we're getting ready to leave, this rose quartz crystal falls from where I had it. It hits the ground. And I've never had a crystal, like, speak to me in the way this crystal did. But that crystal was like, "You are not leaving with me. You are planting me here on this beach." And then I realized, oh, I know what we need to do. Lauren and I need to go offer this rose quartz to put closure to this grief. So her and I grabbed the rose quartz, and we just, like, jumped down to the end of the jetty as far out as we could get to the ocean. And we, put this rose quartz in both of our hands together, and we say some, beautiful intentions to release all of that. And we throw the rose quartz out to the ocean together and release it and as a healing. What was interesting, though, is that this jetty was in the shape of like a womb. It was like this T shape, like a womb, which was really interesting to note. So, that was really unexpected, but it was part of some kind of womb healing. And anyway, so we get to Marseille, and some of us are processing some pretty deep stuff. And so our first day is just like, we need to rest and, like, process and relax. And our next place that we went to was Mary Magdalene's Grotto, which was just amazing, beautiful, beautiful. In the forest on the hike, like, the fairy energies were so powerful. I mean, it was just a magical forest, and it's a hike just with this, like, slow incline steadily up. Beautiful forest. And so we get to the cave, and we are guided once again to use sound together. And in that cave, they have little places where there's water, and they have the water kind of gated off. but little pools of water in different places, and we felt guided to one particular pool of water, and we do like a little water offering. So like on the way up, there's this little fountain where water comes out from the ground like a spring. So we filled up our bottle with it. It's just there for anyone to, you know, fill up their bottles. And we did a little water offering to like the pool of water in the cave, and all of us using our voices together with intention. And that was a beautiful experience. One of us was offered an egg, like in spirit, in the etheric, while in there, which was really powerful. So this second part of our trip was a lot more sort of low-key, and because we were processing a lot of what we went through in the Languedoc region. But the next big thing that happened was that womb cave that Aaron found. And I just can't begin to tell you, if anyone goes to that area, I highly suggest that you go to that cave. But it's called Mijin, M-E-J-E-A-N, the Mijin Cave. It's not very well known. You can hike to it. It kind of like hugs the coastline till you get there. But the cave itself, I showed pictures on the slideshow. It really, truly looks like entering into the womb. And by the time we went, it was just four of us, Anya, Lauren, Aaron, and myself. And it was kind of difficult to get in. You kind of got to be on all fours to get in. You know, it's a little tricky and kind of steep, but you can do it. But anyway, so we get in there, and we weren't planning on swimming. We really weren't. We were maybe going to put our feet in, but we get in there, and the water is just, like, crystal clear. I mean, just gorgeous water. But it's super, super cold, really cold. And Aaron, but I was thinking, you know, if I look back on this day and I don't get in the water, I will regret it. And Aaron was like, I have to get in. I know it. So we're like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to get in. And so little by little, slowly, we get into this really cold water. And at one point, Aaron literally felt the mermaid energies pushing him in. And, I mean, it was like there was no choice that we couldn't not get in. We had to get in. And so we're swimming around in this cave, and it was just pure joy, especially after everything we had been through. It was just pure joy. And the most beautiful, I can say up to this point in my life, one of the most beautiful experiences I have ever had. The wow. Water was beautiful. It was clear. Yes, it was cold, but we also felt the presence of so many beings all over the place, like just having fun and swimming with us. It wasn't about intense ceremony or anything like that. It was joy, and it was like the beings wanted to be with us in joy, and it was just like rippling that joy out into the ethers, you know? So Anya is, I call her our interdimensional photographer, because if she walks into a place and, you know, all of the unseen beings, they're like, yeah, sure, you can take my picture, you know, they'll show up. And so she decided to just, like, be our photographer while the rest of us were swimming. And almost every picture, you can see some kind of being somewhere and somehow being formed. And I included one of those pictures in the slideshow. Or shared it. And I'm going to share this after the trip, like weeks later, and I'm not trying to end it just yet, but I just have to share. There's more to share, but I want to just say this. I was looking through the pictures, and one of the pictures Anya took of myself in the water literally looks like I'm holding a physical baby in my arms. And it looks like it's coming up out of the water. Did you get to see it, Ariel, that picture?
Yeah, I did see it, but at your request, I didn't include it in the slideshow. Cause...
It's kind of sacred to myself. But you see what I'm talking about. It really looks like I'm holding a physical baby. And as I was looking at that picture, I did receive the information that it is something. I just don't know exactly what, but I don't have to know. But I just know that more went on in that cave than I understand. And it was really important to be in there swimming. And we very much felt the mermaid energies. And anyway, so that those were, you know, most of the things that we experienced on the trip. The very last day, we decided to go horseback riding, which was amazing. And then the very last, which, you know, our last experience, which I call our last supper, was this restaurant we found on the beach. And in attendance, we looked up at the sky and, you know, how you can sometimes see clouds that look exactly like spaceships. And there was a whole fleet of them right outside the restaurant on our last day. And we were all just like, oh, my gosh, could it be more obvious, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's a great
shot. Yeah, it was, yeah. So pretty much that was our trip. It was really powerful and transformative, and it's still kind of unraveling itself in all of our lives, and it means more than we actually understand. And, you know, how we were present with each other was super important. That, you know, a lot of us were in some of our deepest wounds that we would want to be alone in, but we were forced to be in those wounds with each other, which allowed all of us to experience unconditional love. You know, you can be in this part of yourself that you don't like, and that you might reject in yourself and don't want to be present with, but yet we had the chance to experience being in those parts of ourselves and being unconditionally loved by everybody else. And that was really powerful and really transformative for all of us. You know, some of the big things that were happening as far as like the overarching energetics of the whole trip, you know, pulling back and looking at it, one was the presence of the elements. Like the wind was so strong the entire time, and all of the locals said this is very unusual. Like, this doesn't happen like this. And it was there the whole time, from the Languedoc region all the way to the Marseille region, was really high winds. Very interesting. And, and oftentimes before we would go to a site visit, there would be a rain right before, and then when we get there, the rain is done. And so definitely the presence of the elements were there. And the use of sound together as a tool, a sacred tool, and also this, you know, womb healing that seemed to be happening, this concept of the womb. So, yeah, that was pretty much the majority of it, of the trip. And, you know, my mother was having one experience after another with Jesus, and just such beautiful experiences. And she was able to be in a place where she could hold space for everybody else who was going through deep transformative work, transmutation work, evolution work, you know, as we were going into our next level. She was able to support everybody from this beautiful place. That was the trip.
Wow. Well, yeah. I get the real strong feeling that trip isn't over yet. You brought stuff back with you that, you know, like seeds, and you don't even know the beauty of what they're going to grow at this time.
You're right.
Yeah, so there are, like, you know, layers yet to come. So you might be back home, but you brought things with you that will continue, I'm sure, to bring revelations and higher levels.
Yeah. And just as a little astrology magic, and you'll love this, Ariel, is my Jupiter and Uranus were in my third house. And so, like, at the time. And so there I was going through all of this voice stuff there in France. And it's just funny that, yes, it was in the third house and in France. And here I am talking to you guys about France with my voice. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And communicating. It's just funny how all that works.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, if I remember correctly, you're a Libra.
Yeah.
And Libra is ruled by Venus. And Venus rules the voice.
Ah, okay, there we go.
Yeah, so it's always been yours.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Yes, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, the last thing I forgot to say was the cave. One last thing in the cave. After the swim, I did some intuitive singing, and this song came through, and then there was zero fear. And so that was like the culmination of the voice transformation of breaking through. I was able to, in the cave, sing with zero fear, and it felt like some kind of mermaid energy is coming through. But anyways, I had forgotten to share that, so I just thought I'd share it, that voice journey culminated.
Yeah, but not surprising, not surprising. And I think while each of you received specific things that each of you needed to have as a group, you know, there's a higher commonality where you all had a lot of, gifts, downloads, remembrances, understanding, reconnecting. And that's not done yet.
No, you're right, Aria. Yeah. You are right. You are right. It's still unfolding within every single one of us. Absolutely. Yep.
Well, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how did you meet Ariana?
Yeah, so this was so funny. Another one of those divine orchestrations that, like, one day before leaving to the south of France, I get contacted by Ariana. She finds me online. But one day before I'm to leave, she contacts me and says, hey, you know, I'm looking for a Mary Magdalene pendant. For my group, I do tours to the south of France. And I laugh at the universe because I'm like, this is so funny because I'm about to leave to the south of France tomorrow. And he's just like,
oh,
really?
Wow.
And so she might have just Googled Mary Magdalene gifts or pendants or something, and she found me. Yeah, that's how we connected. And as soon as I got on the phone with her, it just, it's one of those things where I felt like I've known her for a lifetime. I mean, so comfortable, so much ease. And it's like, I know you, you know. And so, yeah, we're working together for a large order for, you know, Mary Magdalene pendants and pyramids for her tour groups that she does to the south of France. And I know she has one coming up in September. And so, yeah, meeting her was divine orchestration, hands down.
No doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
No doubt. So you make the pendants, are they organite?
Yeah, so, you know, I started making organite in about 2019. And, you know, as my journey is going with it, I'm finding that I'm being very clearly guided and, like, given instruction and guidance on what to make. And Mary Magdalene was, you know, one of those guides that came through, and she gave me clear instructions on how to create the exact pyramid that she wanted, like a large pyramid. And then she later gave me a vision of a symbol for a Mary Magdalene pendant. And it's interesting that sometimes when this information comes through, I have to sit with the codes of it for quite a bit of time before it can be ready to be released. Like, I have to embody these things completely before they can be released out. And so it was a year after I received the instruction for the pendant before I could get it out, because I was still working on all the codes myself, you know.
Wow.
And that's the same with the Athena pendant that came through, the Athena pendant and pyramid. Like, it was many months after receiving the instruction for the Athena pendant. And I even had to attend the Athena quest before I could make the Athena pendant and get it released, because I had to embody the codes in order to be able to share them in the organite. So I find that process very intriguing. But I found that I was receiving very clear guidance and instruction for the organite. I was given clear guidance on what I now call my Stardust Matrix, which is a particular blend of 13 different ingredients that make organite powerful. so that they can generate a lot of orgone energy. And, you know, that energy, like, comes through the symbols and, you know, the crystals. And so they beam out a particular frequency. And when people began, like, reporting to me, leaving reviews and reporting to me, like, their healings and their transformations and their mystical experiences, you know, I began to see that, wow, these pieces, they're more than I quite understood. I then understood that I was sort of more of a channel to allow whatever codes this person needed to come through into their pendant in a process I'm not even really aware of, for them to have the experiences that they're having with them. So I feel like I'm just like I'm a vessel to allow to be created whatever a person needs. So yeah.
Yeah, and how would someone, you know, where's your catalog? How can they get a hold of you for your Organite?
Yeah, so I'm currently selling on Etsy as my platform. So my store name is called Orgone Crystal Alchemy. And you can find, if you search Orgone Crystal Alchemy on any most platforms, so I sell on Etsy. You can find me on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, all of those as Orgone Crystal Alchemy. And then on YouTube, my YouTube handle is Conscious Ascension. And I also have a website, Orgone Crystal Alchemy, www.orgonecrystalalchemy.com. And the website is about to go for a complete overhaul, but it is there. That's how I can be found. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I've got several of your pieces, and they are far and away more powerful than, you know, let's say your garden variety Organite.
Yeah.
They carry a lot more, I want to say power, a lot more juice.
They do pack a punch. They really do.
Yeah.
Some people have to get used to them. Some people feel dizzy right off because if they're sensitive, then they some people need some adjusting time. So I'll tell them to put it under their pillow and sleep with it for a little bit to adjust, to synchronize with it. And then you will adjust and you'll come in resonance with it. But yeah, they do pack a punch.
Yeah. Well,
so.
I am so, you know, proud of you and bringing all of this into manifestation, getting with, you know, the people that needed to also be there. This was a major mission.
Yeah.
Even though you might have thought it was an adventure at first, but it actually was a mission.
Absolutely, yep. And, you know, that first vision that happened with Goddess, where I had this whole stack of brochures, there are many more trips to come with this group of people. Like, we feel this strong sense of mission work that is global and that we will be taking these trips together to different places, and we're already getting like where we need to go next, and then after that, and then after that. And so, you know, we're just surrendering to it, and we feel like our work is global. So thanks to you guys for making it all possible.
Well, there are plenty of people who have come to a quest that are not doing this kind of thing. So we provided the backdrop, and you took it from there.
No, we're barreling forward with it, with our hearts wide open and so much gratitude. So, yeah.
it was just a wonderful accomplishment, full of valuable lessons and realizations. And, and like I said, it's not done yet. So keep us updated on the epilogue, how all these things congeal and come together. But keep us updated as more things happen, you know, within the group.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, we will. Absolutely. We'll definitely let you know. I think our next trip is probably going to be next April. We're probably going to do, like, England through to Scotland. And after that, we probably got Greece. And... you know, all kinds of places we're already receiving. We need to go
use our voices together,
whatever we need to do, you know. So, yeah,
it's happening.
That's
just so wonderful. That's so wonderful. Well, it has just been a delight hearing about your trip and all the you know, magical, powerful things that happened. And
yeah.
I so appreciate, you know, because what you did as a group has benefit for more than just you.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, and for the planet, for the elementals, for the souls that were lost in France and all of that. There's a lot of far-reaching effect. So,
yeah.
Good work. Good work.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this with us. And I'll look forward to the follow-up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll see you again in person before too long.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
Well, giving you a big hug.
Yes, we love you guys so much.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Grateful.
Yeah, and give your mom a hug for us, too.
Will do. All right.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, that is it for us this evening, and we will be back in 2 weeks from tonight. Until that time, remember, hold gratitude in your heart and give compassion instead of judgment. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.